Hi, Cliff Goldstein here again, and I want to start out with a story that a British philosopher told. This takes place about 100 years ago, and this wealthy shipbuilder and shipowner is getting ready to send a ship with immigrants over to America. Well, the only problem is a number of his engineers come and say, you know, we don't think this ship is seaworthy. There's just some problems. And some of the crew have said to them, you know what, we think there's some problems. Well, the ship owner, he's aware of that. But he can't afford to repair the ship. And he says, what's the problem? The ship has made many, many voyages. Everything has been fine. And besides, you know, these people are all going to start, you know, a new life in the new world. He's going to trust in divine providence that'll keep the ship safe. So despite the warnings of everybody, he consoles himself. It's no problem. So what happens? The ship goes off. And the way the guy tells the story in one line, the ship sinks, everybody's killed, hundreds of people are killed, and the owner walks away with the insurance money. Now, the person who told the story was a British writer named W.K. Clifford. And out of the story came what has been known as Clifford's Principle. And the essence of Clifford's Principle is the following. It goes like this, quote, "It is always wrong everywhere and for anyone to believe anything on insufficient evidence." Now, let me repeat that. It is always wrong everywhere for anyone to believe anything on insufficient evidence. And all right, that's fair enough. Now, with that in mind, I want you to look at this for a minute. This is a tea server. It was my grandmother's tea server. I inherited it from her, and I used to sit there and actually drink out of it in my office like this till doctor came and told me that I'll probably get lead poisoning from doing it, so I stopped. Now, if you look at this tea server, all right, it's nothing particularly fancy about it, but it does show evidence of design. Okay? I mean, you could look at it and you could obviously see the handiwork of somebody behind it, okay? Though I suppose it's possible that the thing wasn't designed. I just don't think that's logical. I don't think that's the best answer. I think logically, rationally, anybody could look at that and say, this thing was designed. Now, again, I don't want to be dogmatic about it. Maybe it wasn't, but I think you could say it was designed. Now, I want to step away from that for a minute and come to the questions of origins. Now, what I don't want to do is I don't want to make the leap that because this thing was designed, that therefore there had to be a designer who created the universe. Okay, I don't want to do that today. I think there's something to that argument. But down the road, we'll have a little talk one day about the Scottish philosopher David Hume on that. No, instead, I want to talk about something else. Putting aside all the crazy notions of how the world appears to us, put aside all the subjectivity of how the world appears to us, I mean, this thing does exist. I mean, boom, 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 it is here. This table's here. I'm here. There's something out here. Something does exist. You know, I think about the philosopher Descartes in the 1700s. You know, Descartes was raised and educated, and he just thought everything he thought was a bunch of nonsense. He, you know, just, you know, wanted to throw out everything he taught, and he decided, what is the one thing he could know for sure? What is the one thing he could absolutely be sure about? I mean, he could look at his hand and say, well, maybe it's an illusion. Maybe my hand isn't here. He could look up at the sky, and maybe it's all an illusion. Maybe we're all brains in vats. And he was looking for certainty. And he said, okay, what is the one thing I could be absolutely certain of? And he came to his famous statement, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. His basic idea was maybe he's deceived in everything he believes. Maybe he doesn't understand anything. He's wrong about everything. But the fact that he thinks, the fact that he thinks he has to exist in order to think, and this was supposedly some foundational new move, and the whole modern philosophy supposedly began out of Descartes' cogito ergo sum. The only problem was about 1,200 years earlier, St. Augustine basically said the same thing. Dubito ergo sum. I doubt, therefore, I am. Yeah, well, the point is that something was here. Something was here. You know, it's funny. I think about it too. Bertrand Russell eventually just mocked the whole thing of Descartes. And he said the only thing Descartes proved is thoughts were thunk. He didn't prove anything beyond that. But anyway, all that aside, the point is something's here. Something exists. Whatever it is, however filtered it comes through us, I don't want to argue that. We've looked at that before. Now, the question is, though, something is here. Okay, I think that's obvious. But now we ask ourselves the question is, though, is it's the age-old question. Okay, stuff's here. The question is, how did it all get here? Okay, what do you want to argue, what it means, and blah, blah, blah. It's here. Somehow it had to get here. Now, there are two basic overarching views on how the universe exists and how we're here. Okay, the first one sees the universe and everything in it as pretty much a product of purely material things that arose just by chance. Everything from the Andromeda galaxy to our deepest longings have a materialistic origin and existence. I mean, they're made of atoms, atoms in the void. Now, really, this isn't anything new. 600 years before Christ, the Greek philosopher Democritus basically said the same thing. He said the universe is composed of atoms and the void. And then it's still, as I said, this is still today. In fact, an astronomer recently once said, the universe just happens to be one of those things which happens to appear from time to time, okay? Now, this position is pretty much unpacked something like this. You know, billions of years ago, there was some tremendous explosion. We call it the Big Bang. And in the Big Bang, matter, energy, space, and time. Now, that's a tough one to wrap your mind around. That time was created at the Big Bang. Anyway, all this stuff gets thrown out, and these interstellar gases coalesce, and they cool down, and they harden into planets, including ours. You know, was it third rock from the sun or something? And eventually, pools of water began formed, and over time, amino acids mixed with carbon, and these eventually created bacteria that evolved into human beings. Okay, that's basically my understanding of the secular view of origins. Now, the crucial point on this one, and this is a point you don't want to miss, with this philosophy, this understanding, there was no purpose, there were no goals, there was no intention with these processes. They just happened, and that's it. You know, there was a French philosopher here, let me see, a biologist. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Jacques Monod. This is a really famous quote. This is a really well-known quote in his book, Chance and Necessity. And I think this catches and he's very logical. This catches the results of this thinking. Here's Monod, Chance and Necessity. The ancient covenant is in pieces. Man knows at last that he is alone in the universe, unfeeling immensity, out of which he emerged only by chance. His destiny is nowhere spelled out, nor is his duty. The kingdom above or the darkness below, it is for him to choose. Now, I'm not sure exactly what he means by the kingdom above as opposed to the darkness below, but the point is, he's right. He's right. I mean, he's basically saying it all has no reason, no purpose. We're just here. There's no purpose. There was no goals included in it. You know, just there was none. So there was none in the origin, and there's none in the final process. Where are, as that philosopher, as that astronomer said, we're just one of those things that just happen to have from time to time. You know, you stick a jack in the box, in the box, the jack in the box comes out of the box. But if you don't stick one in, one's not going to come out. There were no goals, no purposes in creating us. So how could there be any goals? And there was no goals and purpose in our creation. So how can any ultimately come out of that? Now, think about this. I remember a couple years ago, I was wandering. I love museums. Anywhere I go in the world, the museums, I just love wandering through museums. And a while back, I was just wandering over my own local Baltimore museum, and I'm walking around the corner in the museum, and I'm walking around, and boom, there, standing there, right there, is Rodin's Thinker. You know, this spiel, this one, the famous statue. I thought, man alive. I mean, I was like, I walk in, I see this thing. And But I want to use that as an example. You know, Aristotle years ago said you can't really understand anything till you understand its causes. And he built a whole epistemology on that. Well, let's think of Rodin's thinker here for a moment. Aristotle said there are four causes for everything. The material cause. What is it made out of? Well, I guess the thinker was made out of bronze. There was the formal cause, the form of it. It was made into a certain shape, the thinker. So that's the formal cause. The efficient cause. Well, that was the force, whatever he used to forge and make the shape of it. So you got the material cause, the formal cause, the efficient cause, and then you got what he calls the final cause. That is the ultimate reason for it. What is the purpose of that it was made? So you got the four causes, efficient, material, formal, and final cause. Now the interesting thing is that modern science today pretty much dismisses final causes. In other words, there's no fun. You can have a material, you could have an efficient, but you don't have a final cause. And in other words, they throw out the final cause. And I guess they're thinking if there was an ultimate final cause, I think for science that smacks too much of religion of a god, and they throw that out now. Now, I don't know, but it just seems to me that that the final cause might be the most important thing, the most important reason for something. I mean, you know, you can know all these other causes, but if you don't know its purpose, you know, you'll think about the human heart. You know, it's got the four chambers, and it's got the valves and the pumps and the electrical circuitry and all that. It's all pretty impressive. But what's it all there for? What's the purpose if it doesn't have a final cause? And that's pumping blood and keeping us alive. And yet we're told that everything in the universe doesn't have a purpose to it. You know, again, I don't want to be dogmatic. I don't want to be. It just doesn't seem right. Just doesn't seem right that all this no purpose. You know, sometimes they say we're like the toss of dice, but I don't even think that's accurate because dice were created with a purpose. And they got the numbers on the dice. They're there for a reason. You know, and they were thrown with an intent in mind. And yet the basic scientific view is our existence. There was no purpose whatsoever. I remember as a kid and growing up, I saw some graffiti on a wall and it said, ignore this sign. Well, it's one of those funny paradoxes because if you ignore the sign, you have to read it in order to ignore it. But it was graffiti on a wall. And yet we're supposed to believe that all of creation, that everything that was made with less thought and purpose went into all that was created than that graffiti on the wall. I mean, again, I don't want to be dogmatic. I just don't think that's reasonable. Remember Clifford's principle. Remember what it said? It's always everywhere. It is always wrong everywhere for anyone to believe anything upon insufficient evidence. So anyway, according to this view, we're here purely by chance, nothing more. Whether a Bach symphony, whether a plant doing photosynthesis, whether, you know, nuclear fusion, whatever. It's all just a confluence of atoms, a chance congruence of forces that came together. And the same mindless forces that brought all these things together, we're told, will eventually take it away. Now, I happen to know that very many smart, educated people believe that way. Very bright people. That's one view. Now, on the other hand, there's another overarching view of origins, one which encompasses a perspective a little grander and broader than the narrow confines of the scientific material one. This position states basically that everything that created came from a creator, from a god or gods, whoever brought this into existence, and we're here for a purpose. Okay, and that some of these purposes can be divined through nature. Just as a painting implies a creator, the creation implies a creator. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, just because there's a creator, it doesn't necessarily mean it could be good. There could be some god who created us just to torment us. I like that line in Shakespeare, one of his plays where Shakespeare says, as flies are to wanton boys, are we to the gods, they kill us for their sport. I mean, this god could have created us here and then just left us, abandoned us, or he could plan to, you know, when we died, you know, put us in some, you know, have us slaves on some trireme where we're rowing forever in some parallel universe. I don't know. The point is, just because there's a creator doesn't necessarily mean it's good. Okay, but the idea of a loving creator, a loving God, the kind of God depicted in the Bible, this gives us the hope of something better, something beyond what we could see. And I've got a quote here from a scientist named John Polkinghorne. And he says, basically, only God, it seems to me, can take from death the last word. In other words, if we're not just left here to ourselves, if we're just left to ourselves, if there isn't anything beyond what we've got, then what hope is there? See, the atheistic materialistic view of the world doesn't really offer us anything other than coming from this cold, meaningless forces that first brought us here. Again, a God's no guarantee of good, only the possibility of one. So then I really think you've got two options here. You've got a meaningless, purposeless creation, which basically leaves us nothing, or you got a God who created us here. So I think in many ways one of our most important questions deals with origins, because it's how we got here ultimately determines our ending. I love that quote from T.S. Eliot where he said, "In my beginning is my end." In my beginning is my end. And I think that's right. It's from how we got here ultimately determines where we're going to wind up. You know, there's this old Latin phrase, out of nothing, nothing comes. And it's an obvious principle. It's a truth. It's too basic. Out of nothing, nothing comes. Because just how could something come out of nothing? I mean, it would be easier to get 6 out of 3 than to get something out of nothing. Okay, but then how about the earth and the sky and the stars then? Or your shoes or your mother? They certainly couldn't come from nothing, could they? I mean, they had to come from something other than themselves and on and on and on. Whatever it was nothing, it was obviously something. Now see, here's the problem though. For many years it was believed that the universe was eternal, that nothing created it, that it was from eternity past. There was never a time when the universe didn't exist. Now, there are some difficult philosophical questions with that, but it removed the need of a creator. If it was always here, you didn't have a creator. Now, the problem now, though, is scientists believe that the universe didn't always exist. Okay, Stephen Hawking, perhaps the greatest scientist since Einstein, he basically said that the universe had a beginning. He basically said that everybody believes that the universe had a beginning. Now, the conclusion that the universe had a beginning leads to the difficult question about God. How did it get started? If it's absurd to believe that my shoe couldn't come out of nothing, then how much more the universe? So if the universe did have a beginning, if there had to be something there to create it, you know, in the universe and the billions of stars and everything involved. So, you see, here's one scientist agreed that the universe had a beginning. They were forced themselves to some inescapable question about God. You know, I mean, again, as I said, Hawking said once the universe had a beginning, we had to suppose it had a creator. Now, it's very obvious that would seem to me to be the logical thing. It would seem to be logical the universe had a beginning, but science had been forced. They've been forced by the obvious to embrace the absurd. Instead of God being the creator of the universe, they now argue that, and I mean it, nothing was the creator. That's what they're saying. They're saying that nothing was the creator. Alan Guth, an astronomer, he made the following statement. He says, conceivably everything can be created from nothing, and everything might include a lot more than what we could see. In the context of inflationary cosmology, it is fair to say that the universe is the ultimate free lunch. In other words, he's saying that everything got created out of nothing. Now, what does he mean by nothing? Well, how? Well, through quantum fluctuations, that's how. Now, I don't want to get into try to explain to you quantum fluctuations I couldn't be into. All I know is that quantum fluctuations, they're there, then obviously there's something, okay? I mean, if it's in quantum physics, I could tell you two things about it. It's small and it's fast, okay? Those are two things about quantum fluctuations. And according to this, out of these quantum fluctuations, the universe was created. Now, again, this seems kind of absurd that they're going to claim that, but that's what they argue with. I mean, that according to this theory, out of these quantum fluctuations, everything in the universe began. Now, again, I don't know what a quantum fluctuation is, but let's say it's true. Let's say the universe really began with quantum fluctuations. Okay, but you know, that really kind of begs the question. Where did these quantum fluctuations begin with? Where did the matter, where did the energy, whatever it was, you know, to create these things, there had to be something to create a quantum fluctuation. As one critic of quantum fluctuation stated, here we go, I love this. He says that, Alan Guth writes in pleased astonishment that the universe really did arise from essentially nothing at all. As it happens, a false vacuum patch 10 to 26 centimeters in diameter and 10 to 23 solar masses, to negative 23 solar masses. It would appear then that essentially nothing has both spatial extension and mass. While these facts might strike Guth as inconspicuous, others may suspect that nothingness, like death, is not a matter that admits of degrees. Okay? See, The point here is forgetting all the scientific stuff and all the scientific intricacies and everything that's going on and the nuances. The point is understandable. Whatever a quantum fluctuation is or supposed to be, it's certainly not nothing. Whatever it is, there's energy, there's force, there's something. Whatever it was, and it had to come from somewhere. You know, Hawking once asked the question, who breathed fire into the equations? And I think that's a good point. Even if you got these equations, where did they come from? So you got one of two positions that we're dealing with here. That the universe was created from nothing, these quantum fluctuations. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be a quantum physicist. But a quantum fluctuation, whatever it is, it ain't nothing. It's something, okay? And that had to have arise from something. But anyway, here's what we're dealing with. You got the universe was created from nothing, or it was result of a powerful God. Which one remains the most logical and reasonable? Which one best fits the evidence? All that exists, the stars, the clouds, people, trees, they came from nothing? They came from nothing, or that they came from a creator? You tell me. I mean, I don't want to be dogmatic about this. You know, I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But I mean, if it's sensible to accept as a given the physical processes needed to, you know, create quantum fluctuations, because you really need to. There was something that was there to create these quantum fluctuations. Or is it better to accept as a given a creator who was always there? You know, I think in the end for the atheist, the most logical presupposition for an atheist would have to be the universe came from nothing. Because if the universe didn't come from nothing, it came from something. And if it came from something, what was that something? Whatever it was, there had to be something behind it to create it. So they're forced to start with nothing. And I don't know, you know, you tell me, nothing created everything, or a God created everything? These are the two options. These are the two options that we're presented with. And so I think in many ways scientists were forced, if they wanted to get rid of the idea of a God, they had to go to something else. And they were forced to go to nothing. Now, and I just don't know. It just doesn't seem to be the most logical and reasonable explanation for it. Let me read you a quote here, too. This goes back to the quantum fluctuation thing, because this is what they're forced to go to. Quantum fluctuations, which they argue is nothing. But as one critic says, how do we account for the situation within which one or more gigantic quantum fluctuations could occur? The atheist says we just have to assume it and treat it as a given. Okay, fine. Well, maybe I could assume and treat as a given a creator God. Okay, and for some reason that just seems to me to be a little more logical, a little more reasonable, a little more rational than believing in a quantum fluctuation is the thing that created the whole the whole universe, or as they say, it's nothing. You know, there's been this whole idea for years, and that, you know, logical, rational people, all logical, rational, educated people have given up on the belief in God, and it's, you know, it's a bygone something from a superstitious age and so forth, and in the age of reason and so on, and yet I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all. In fact, I think logically and rationally, there's the burden of proof is on those who don't believe that there's a creator. Because if you don't start out with the creator, what do you start out with? You have to start out with what? With nothing? That's what some of them are saying. That's what some of them, by the way, if you ever get a chance, this little book here, The Book of the Cosmos, Imagining the Universe from Heraclitus to Hawking's. Very powerful. He goes through and looks at all the different views of creation in here. And you can read here the essays of those trying to argue that the universe, they don't want God. They don't want, so they're forced to go to nothing as the creator. And again, I think it comes down to, if you want to look at two options. Nothing created us. Right. It's possible. I just think it's kind of bizarre. I mean, nothing created us, or a quantum fluctuation. But again, a quantum fluctuation doesn't solve the problem. All it does is push it back a little further. Where did the quantum fluctuation come? Or a God created us. And I don't know. If I can believe this had a creator, it's only logical to think something as the universe had a creator. So I guess in the end we're left with two choices, at least in the parameters I'm looking at now. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, as Genesis says, or in the beginning, nothing created the heavens and the earth. God created the heavens and the earth. Nothing created the heavens and the earth. You take your pick. And as you do, don't forget Clifford's principle as you make that choice.